Dear listeners, Sai Ram from Prashant Nilayam and welcome once again to Vahini Satsang. Our series when we have this opportunity to contemplate on the beautiful scriptures that Bhagwan himself wrote for our benefit way back in the 60s, 70s and 80s. Many weeks ago, months ago, we started with Prema Vahini, the first volume that Bhagwan had himself penned, and after close to 108 months of satsang on Prema Vahini, we then moved to the next volume that Bhagwan had written. In fact, Bhagwan had written Sandeha Nivarini simultaneously. Even as he was writing Prema Vahini, he started this series, Sandeha Nivarini, wherein he asked the question as a bhakta, as a devotee, and he himself answers as the divine preceptor. So this is what we have been discussing in the last few months. We are now in chapter 10 of Sandeha Nivarini. And as we had seen before, the 10th chapter begins with Bhagwan telling the devotee, you are so full of happiness today, you are so full of joy today. And then the devotee says, well, Swami, you say that we are all embodiments of joy, isn't it? And then Swami says, yes, but then you should always be in this state. And when the devotee says, I am trying, Swami, that is when Bhagwan begins the way the devotee can always be in this state of happiness. And Bhagwan goes on to explain to this devotee how, if the devotee understands what is reality, then he will very easily be in that state of permanent happiness, permanent joy. And Bhagwan says, what is reality? And when the devotee says, is everything that is seen, spoken, felt, seen, listened to, is that not all real? Bhagwan says, you have to understand who is experiencing all this. You keep feeling that the body is experiencing all this. You feel that the body is the I principle, that I awareness. But even in a dead man, all the limbs of the body are still there, but the man is not able to do anything. So one has to inquire, who is the one who is seeing, listening, experiencing? And that's how Bhagwan leads the devotee to go deeper and think about the Atma, how Atma pervades everything. And how one can experience the Atma if slowly one rises above body consciousness. And Swami says how rebirth happens because of this I consciousness, because of this identification of oneself with the body. And Bhagwan goes on to say how people who destroy completely this awareness of this I consciousness, completely their identification with the body, those people are in the state of mukti. And even as Bhagwan explains what is the real I and what is the unreal I, Bhagwan brings those concepts from the Vedanta of Chittakasha, Chidakasha, Bhutakasha, how the eye awareness is called as Chidakasa. The Lord is hailed as Satchitananda. That eye awareness is what is called, referred to as Chidakasa. And Bhagwan says the reflection of Chidakasa is Chittakasha. Akasha means the sky. So there are different levels of existence within us. And that is what Bhagwan explains in segment 10.2. Swami says the reflection of the Atma, reflection of the Chittakasa or the Atma leads to the Chidakasa. The Chittakasa. So the Chittakasa is the reflection of Chidakasa. Chidakasa is the Atma. The reflection of the Atma, when it takes the shape of Manas, Buddhi, Ahamkaram and all the internal organs, that is when it becomes Chittakasa. As Bhagavan explains these concepts, he says, ultimately the mind alone is the cause for man's bondage and liberation. And it is the mind that manufactures these delusions. And one has to inquire. Through inquiry, once we know what is real and what is unreal, through inquiry, once we are able to grasp this secret, then we will not be carried away by all the senses, by the mind, by the intellect, because we will connect and go back to that one principle, which is the source. Swami says, if you get headache, you apply ointment. And when the pain disappears, then you are fine. This pain is this Maya. And the ointment that has to be applied is this inquiry, Swami says, this vicharana, this whole process of questioning to understand the truth. And as Bhagavan explains this, Swami says, we do all these japam, dhyanam, this bhajan, this parayana, all of them is towards this process only. It is only to become ripe so that we become capable of understanding this I principle, capable of doing this inquiry. And Bhagavan says people do manam, people keep silence, and it's not important that you don't talk. What is more important is everything within that silent. And then Bhagavan so beautifully says that what is true silence? And who are the people who are truly silent? What is Maunam? When we say that there are people who do not talk at all, Swami says people just not opening their mouth to talk because of a vow of silence does not mean that they have attained realization. Not talking is just behavioral. It is just behavioral silence. If you're continuously talking inside, then there is actually no silence. But yes, if you are at least externally silent, it will definitely help you in your sadhana, Swami says, because you will talk less, you will have less wastage of energy, you will collect less information, you will definitely have less distractions and disturbances, so you can focus on the things that you are doing more. And the people, the true jnanis, the true realized souls, the true men of wisdom, Swami says, they don't need to do this practice, because a true jnani sees everything as one, Swami says. A true man of wisdom cannot see diversity in the world. Everything for this person is just reflections of that one principle. And such people, Swami says, are in the world to guide humanity. Such people have renunciation as their hallmark. They are devamsha sambhutas. They are bits of divinity who are born among men. And they are there only to help. No acts of theirs gets attached to them. They can act, but the consequences of the action will not get attached to them. So Bhagavan says that we reach these stages through inquiry, and the inquiry will lead to renunciation, vairagyam. Without vairagyam, without renunciation, you cannot have wisdom, you cannot have jnana. There is no moksha without vairagyam. Swami very clearly says, there is no liberation without renunciation. Tyage neke amritattva manasu, Swami used to always say. You can never ever be a renunciant if you are not in this path of inquiry. And you can never ever be a realized soul if you have not taken to the path of renunciation. So when Bhagavan explains all this, this is what Bhagavan conveys in segment 10.3. And we did spend some time discussing this in the previous segment. I gave you the example of Swami Vivekananda. But in segment 10.4, the Bhakta asks, Swami, then where does bhakti come in? Where does devotion come in? You are talking all the time of jnana. You are talking all the time of inquiry, renunciation, and wisdom. But I don't see the role of bhakti, the role of devotion in all of these. I don't see where that fits in. And that is how segment 10.4 begins. And Bhagavan beautifully guides the devotee. Bhagavan talks about anurakti, bhakti, jnana, and vairagya. So let's listen to what Bhagavan has mentioned in this segment 10.4, and then we will pray to him to guide our thoughts.
Then where does bhakti come in?
We have come to the very beginning again. Earlier than jnana, it is the form of bhakti. Earlier than bhakti, it is the form of anurakti or affection. All these are one. Anurakti is the flower. Bhakti is the raw fruit. The ripening of the fruit is jnanam, and vairagyam is the final stage, the fruit. Without one, you cannot have the other. The basis for all these is the flower of anurakti. That becomes the raw fruit of bhakti on its own, leading to becoming the ripened fruit of jnana and vairagya. Until this happens, safeguarding this unripe fruit of bhakti is achieved through the above mentioned activities of prayer and spiritual practices. Therefore, everything is one. There is no other. Keep this feeling in your mind always, and act accordingly.
At least, to keep up appearances in the world, one has to sometimes say, "This is mine." What is to be done then?
Of course, you may have to say so. But simply because you say everything is mine, there is no need for you to feel the separateness. When you travel in a carriage, do you feel that you are the carriage? Look at the sun. It gets reflected in a small pot filled with water, in a broad river, in a mirror or a polished pot. For this reason, does the sun feel that all these things are he? Does it get sad when the pot breaks or the river gets dry? This is exactly like that. If you take I to be the body, that will lead to all worries. If you don't take it so, you will shine like the sun, independent of anything else. Besides, you will be immanent everywhere.
It means each person must first discover for himself who he is.
Exactly. Inquire into that first. Of course, for those who are not competent, this will be unintelligible. If you tell you are yourself Brahman, you have attained moksha, you are in that stage, to those not competent, they will do no sadhana. They will act without any rule or order, and they will pay no regard to right and wrong. This can be realized through the path of service. The people who have experienced this should not teach this to the undeserving. This must be revealed only by a guru or by great souls or by the command of the Lord. Those who have the inclination and interest can of course freely inquire about it. However, it must be practiced. There is no use simply hearing and repeating all is one. That is meaningless.
So that is segment 10.4, and there are some very interesting things here. The interesting confusions that people get into. Before we come to that, Bhagwan very clearly says that before jnana, it is bhakti. Before the path of wisdom, it is the path of devotion. And earlier to bhakti, it is the form of anurakti or affection, Swami says. Before bhakti, it is affection. It is affection which becomes devotion, which becomes later wisdom. And Swami makes that very beautiful statement, anurakti is the flower. The affection is the flower. Bhakti is the raw fruit. So this flower transforms into raw fruit. Affection becomes devotion. And the fruit then ripens. This ripened fruit is jnanam, is wisdom. And when it is completely ripe, that is vairagyam, that is renunciation. That's why Swami says, everything is one only. Don't distinguish, this is separate, that is separate. They are just different stages. So it starts with affection. I remember this beautiful discourse that Bhagwan gave to the students in Trey Brindavan way back in July 1988. As I was reading Satisai Speaks, I came across this, where Swami says, many call themselves devotees, but this claim means nothing by itself. It is like addressing a letter to someone. Unless it is acknowledged by the recipient, you cannot be sure whether the letter reached the addressee and how he reacted to it, isn't it? Swami says, similarly, whether one is a devotee or not should be declared by the Lord Himself. This is what Krishna declared. regarding Arjuna. He told Arjuna, "You are my devotee and you are my friend, Sakha. You are my devotee, Bhakta, as well as my Sakha, my friend." Arjuna did not declare to Krishna, "I am your devotee." And Krishna also did not tell Arjuna, "You are my devotee." He said, "You are my devotee as well as you are my friend." Swami says, would it not have been sufficient if Krishna had told Arjuna that you are my friend or you are my devotee? Why did he say, "You are my devotee as well as my friend"? Bhagwan very beautifully clarifies, if the Lord were to say to Arjuna, "You are my friend," then the ego of Arjuna would have got inflated and probably he would have taken undue liberties with Krishna. And Krishna will not be able to raise his spiritual life if his ego swells and if he takes the divine lightly. And if Krishna told Arjuna, "You are my devotee," then Arjuna would have become extremely submissive and probably he would have had a lot of fear. Fear should not be there. For a healthy relationship, there should be no fear. At the same time, one should not take excessive liberties. That is why Krishna told Arjuna, "You are my devotee as well as my friend. You are my friend. You can be free with me, but up to a point. Because you are my devotee also. You have to observe certain restraints. You have to exercise control over yourself in your devotion. Because I am your Lord also. I am your master. I am the God. At the same time, but you can be also free with me because I'm your friend." So there has to be that delicate balance in this relationship so that nothing happens which hampers the spiritual progress of the devotee. In fact, as I read this beautiful line where Bhagavan says, Anurakti, affection, is the flower. So this, our affection, that Arjuna's affection towards Krishna, it started like that, isn't it? And then that affection became devotion. So you had friend and devotee relationship. And that slowly led to the ripening of his devotion to Jnanam. You know, when he ultimately realizes, when Gita was given to him, when he had the Vishwarupa Darshan, that's when he realized. And that is when he said, Karishye Vachanam Tava. That's when he said, "Okay, I don't want to ask any more questions. I will just do whatever you say. Because who am I ultimately to do the war? The war is already over. You have accomplished everything. I am just an instrument." So in that spirit of absolute surrender and renunciation, he becomes a perfect instrument of the Lord. So this journey is so beautiful when you think about it, because our relationship with the divine in the initial stages is this stage of Anurakti. We love Swami. There's so many people who have come and just one darshan and you really, your heart is drawn. You don't fall in love, but you rise in love as you look at him. And you want to see him again. You want one more time to be close to him. You want to gaze into his beautiful form. You want to listen to him. you are mesmerized by His presence. You forget yourself when He's there. And you just don't know why, but you love Him. So that happens whenever divine incarnations happen, the magic of their physical form, the power of their presence. That's the reason why a lot of people are drawn towards the Godward path whenever an avatar happens, whenever the divine takes a physical form. Love for the divine surges effortlessly in so many hearts. Flowering happens of anurakti. And slowly that anurakti then becomes bhakti, becomes fruit. That flower becomes fruit. I was really reminded of Sri Ramakrishna Paramahansa, because if you see his spiritual journey, again he was a devamsha sambhuta. He had come with a mission and to teach a lesson. He was born on February 18, 1836 in the little village of Kamarpukur in the district of Hooghly in West Bengal. And Sri Ramakrishna Paramahansa's parents, they belonged to the Brahmin caste, the upper caste, but they were very poor, very pious. They were very devoted to the traditions of religion. And Sri Ramakrishna, as a little child, was full of fun, innocence. He had flowing hair, sweet musical voice, and he grew up in that simple countryside of rice fields, cows, banana, mango trees, and so on. But somehow, he had no inclination for academics. But he sang very beautifully. He expressed his devotion, he expressed his love for things godly through lovely songs, stories of saints, stories of spiritual adventures always caught his attention. And at the age of 6, he experienced a spiritual ecstasy. He was watching the sky and he saw a flight of snow. He saw these white cranes against a black sky. The sky was overcast with rain clouds. And just looking at that scene, seeing this white cranes against black sky, that scene itself somehow had such an ethereal impact on him that he went into a trance. It was like, wow. He had lost consciousness. And from then on, he used to spend time in meditation. And when his father left, when his father passed away, that also contributed more to his spiritual mood. Though at the age of 16, he joined his brother in Kolkata, he refused to go and stay there for long and pursue studies because he was just not interested in the worldly education. He just felt that I have this deep longing for the realization of God. Why do I need to really study these things just to enable me to earn a few rupees? And that is when he took up the duty of being a priest in the Kali temple of Dakshineshwar. You had the deity, Mother Kali. He did not know how to worship the mother. He was ignorant of the scriptures or the intricacies of any ritual. But Ramakrishna, he just spoke to the idol. He just poured his whole soul in taking care of the mother. He used to just simply sit there and sing to the mother. He forgot everything. He was in love with the mother, Anurakti. His affection for the mother was so much that he forgot food, sleep, physical needs, everything. Just that passion to see the mother, for the vision of the mother, was so all-consuming. He would spend his nights in the woods contemplating on the mother. Sometimes there were doubts, because you're doing so much and mother cannot be seen. Mother is just a stone. But at the same time, there was an inner certainty. There was this testimony of this illumined saints. It cannot be that all these people who have told about the mother were speaking untruth. And he intensified his yearning, this affection for the mother got intensified. And it came to a point where just looking at the stone image of the mother did not satisfy. His inquiring mind became restless, breathless to see the mother. He wanted to see the real spirit, and he was determined to behold the mother. And the mother also played a game of hide and seek with him for some time, but at last the mother yielded to the demand of love, the demand of love of this young devotee. And when that experience happened, when he had the direct experience of the Divine Mother, Sri Ramakrishna dropped unconscious on the floor. He was just in a constant flow of bliss. He was lost in these waves of bliss that were surging in his being once he had the vision of the mother. This anurakti, this affection for the mother, had become bhakti. Anurakti is the flower, Swami says. Bhakti is the raw fruit. So anurakti had completely transformed into bhakti. Because it had completely transformed into bhakti, he saw the fruit of his bhakti as the vision of the mother. And that is when he became completely God-intoxicated, as they say. He wanted to see the mother more. He wanted to see her uninterruptedly. Whether his eyes are open, his eyes are closed, he only wanted to see the mother. And that's how he gave himself completely to the practice of various spiritual disciplines. And see the kind of transformation that came in his mind. He did not want any trace of difference in his vision. He felt that whole notion that he is a Brahmin or he belongs to the high caste, that should completely go. And so he used to go and clean the toilets in a low caste person's house, so that the whole identification and this whole feeling that I belong to a higher caste should completely disappear. He did not want, similarly, any sense of differentiation, discrimination in God's creation. Whether it is gold or whether it is clay, he wanted to see only God. And everything became pure. His visions became absolutely pure. If you saw any woman, it would be only the mother. And they say that for years, his eyelids did not touch each other in sleep because he was always in that state. And of course, all the spiritual practices took a toll on his delicate body. He came back to Kamarpukur to recover his health. And people saw how that young boy who used to sing songs was transformed into such a contemplative young man whose vision was always directed to something on a distant horizon. His mother wanted that he should get married. And somehow Sri Ramakrishna Paramahansa felt that it is the will of the Divine Mother and he consented. In fact, he only suggested, where is the girl meant for him? That girl was just 3 miles away. She was very young then. And even after marriage, Sri Ramakrishna prayed to the Divine to make the heart of Sharada Mani, whom he married, as pure or even purer than the moon. The moon may have dark spots, but let her heart not have any dark spots. And Sri Ramakrishna plunged himself again into deep spiritual practices and experimentation now. He forgot everything. He forgot his wife, forgot his mother, forgot his relatives, everybody. Now, he wanted to experience this principle of unity. He wanted to follow these time-honored paths of the Hindu religion under the guidance of competent teachers. And by divine design, they all came to him one by one. There was a woman under whom he practiced the disciplines of Tantra and of the Vaishnava faith. And in a very short time, he experienced the result. He experienced what one experiences, the ultimate, through that path. And this woman who guided Sri Ramakrishna, she declared that Sri Ramakrishna is just not an ordinary person. What you see in him, this agonizing love for God, it is because he himself is an incarnation of God. After that, Ramakrishna moved on to another teacher, Jatadhari. And Ramakrishna now delved into the mysteries of worshipping Rama. And he followed this path and he experienced Rama's presence. Then he followed various other paths. He connected to the divine, thinking of the divine as father, and he experienced the ultimate through that path. He connected to the divine as mother, and he reached the culmination, reaching the end of this path. He connected to the divine as friend. He connected to the divine as beloved. So all of these, he was just experimenting all these beautiful paths. Then came Totapuri, an austere sannyasin. And in 3 days, he realized his complete oneness with Brahman, the undifferentiated absolute. Totapuri was surprised what he had been struggling to attain for 40 years. In 3 days, Sri Ramakrishna Paramahansa attained that state. And Ramakrishna Paramahansa did not stop there. He then turned to Christianity. He turned to Islam. He practiced all the disciplines that are mandated in Christianity. And he experienced the ultimate through that path. He practiced Islam. So through all these paths, having really experienced the ultimate, he had known how everything is just one. And it came to a point where he started worshipping his own wife as the manifestation of the Divine Mother, because everything for him was just divine, divine, and divine. Once he got that experience, then Ramakrishna was convinced of the divine mission on earth. And he came to know that through him, the Divine Mother has a mission. And it was further revealed to him that anyone who had prayed to God sincerely, even once, as well as those who are passing through their final birth on earth, would accept him as their spiritual ideal, and they will mold their lives according to his universal teaching. The people around, they were awestruck seeing the transformation that happened to this man whom they had known a short while ago as just someone who is happy-go-lucky, and he was singing. That young priest had completely transformed. The anurakti, that flower, had become bhakti, and that bhakti had ripened into jnana and vairagya. He had become a man of realization. He had become a new prophet. And once that happened, then Ramakrishna, like a full-blown blossom, attracts bees. Ramakrishna drew to him men and women of different faith, intelligence, people who are meant to be God's messengers, people who are meant to be touched by God to uplift their lives. And he gave generously to all from that inexhaustible storehouse of divine wisdom, because he had reached that stage of jnanam through the process of anurakti, bhakti. When you love the divine intensely, your affection gets completely sublimated. It becomes devotion. And when that devotion is intensified, how Ramakrishna experienced only oneness, what through whatever path he meditated on the divine, and he physically did it. People know intellectually, but physically he followed every spiritual path and he saw how everything is same. That is how he attained jnana, to real experience. By the ripening of bhakti, he took every path of bhakti and saw how that leads to the knowledge of Advaitam. Advaita Darshanam Jnanam, Swamish to always say. Jnanam is Advaita Darshanam. The vision of unity is what is Jnanam. And that is what Ramakrishna experienced. And now, once he reached that stage, that is when he understood that he is there to carry out a mission of the Divine Mother. And he longed for those young souls yet untouched by the world, who'd renounce everything for the realization of God and who'd serve humanity. And he, in fact, he was so consumed with this longing. You know, once there is nothing for you to attain, you are here only to be an instrument of the Lord, and he was waiting. How can he be that instrument of the Lord? How can he take this mission forward? When will those people come who are supposed to learn from me and go out and transform the world? He never liked the talk of worldly people. Worldly things became tasteless for him. They say that he used to go to the roof of a building near the temple and he would cry at the top of his voice, "Come, come, come, my boys, where are you all? I cannot bear to live without you. Please come." He was waiting for the people who would come and take from him the nectar that he wanted to bestow on those deserving ones. They say the way he was longing, a mother could not feel more intensely for her beloved children, or a friend for his dearest friend. That is how he was longing. And short immediately thereafter, yes, those young men started coming, men destined to be his monastic disciples. And we know how that is when Narendranath came into the ambit of Sri Ramakrishna Paramahansa, Narendranath, who later on became Swami Vivekananda. The first meeting at Dakshineshwar between the master and Narendra was momentous. Narendra, careless about his clothes, his general appearance, he was so unlike the other young men who had accompanied him to the temple. His eyes were impressive, partly indrawn, indicating a meditative mood. And he too, like Ramakrishna, he sang beautifully. And as he would sing, he would pour his soul into the song. And they say, this is the song that he sang, that the master first heard from Narendra. And the master was simply awestruck and thanked the mother for sending Narendra. He was waiting for Narendranath to come. I had played for you this song before in the previous session, but it is worth listening to him. Listening to this song that Vivekananda sang once again.
परदेश में ओ परदेश में क्यों परदेसी रहे ए चलो मन जाए घर अपने चलो मन जाए घर जो भाए वो कोरा सपना आँख जो भाए वो कोरा सपना सारे पराए हैं कोई ना अपना आँख जो भाए वो कोरा सपना सारे पराए हैं कोई ना अपना ऐसे झूठे प्रेम में पड़ना भूल में काहे जिए चलो मन जाए घर अपने चलो मन जाए घर अपने साचे प्रेम की ज्योत जला के साचे प्रेम की ज्योत जला के मन सुन मेरी कान लगा के साचे प्रेम की ज्योत जला के मन सुन मेरी कान लगा के पाप और पुण्य की गढ़री उठा के अपनी राह चले चलो मन जाए घर अपने चलो मन जाए घर अपने इस परदेश में ओ परदेश में क्यों परदेशी रहे ए चलो मन जाए घर अपने चलो मन जाए घर अपने।
इट्स अ वेरी पावरफुल सॉन्ग। चलो मन जाए घर अपने। लेट अस गो बैक ओ माइंड, लेट अस गो बैक वंस मोर टू आवर ट्रू होम, टू आवर प्रॉपर होम। व्हाई आर वी इन दिस फॉरेन लैंड, इन दिस परदेश? व्हाई आर वी इन दिस लैंड व्हिच इज नॉट ट्रूली आवर्स? व्हाई शुड वी वांडर एमलेसली इन ए स्ट्रेंजर्स गाइस? ऑल दिस लिविंग बीइंग्स, all these five elements, they are all strangers. They are none of your own. Why do you want to live in a foreign land with strangers? Why don't you want to go back home? Oh, mind, don't you want to go back home? Come, let's go back home. Why are you forgetting yourself? Why are you falling in love with these strangers? Oh, mind, don't become foolish. Take the path of truth and to light the lamp on your way. You have love. Unflaggingly climb with love as the lamp to light your way. And as you walk on this path of truth, you will need some provisions to carry with you on this journey. Which are the provisions? The provisions are the virtues. As Bhagwan used to say, prema, satya, dharma, shanti, all these virtues, this is what will help you in this journey. There are robbers who will rob you of your wealth, rob you of your virtues. Who are these robbers? So there are two highway robbers. They are greed and delusion. This is what this song says. Greed and delusion will all the time want to rob you of your wealth, which are the virtues. And that's why you have to keep two guards with you. Who are these two guards who will protect you from any harm? Calmness of mind. Shanti, calmness of mind, and self-control. You have to have self-control and calmness of mind. They will ensure that your virtues are not robbed away from you. And as you journey, once you become tired, you want to rest. What is the rest? What is this rest house which will welcome you and which will give you all the strength that you need? This rest house is satsang with holy men, company of good people. That is what will give you that rest and energize you, remove your doubts. And if anything happens along the path, and if you are afraid about anything, if fear grips you, then all you have to do is shout loudly the name of God. Because He is the ruler, He is the owner of that road, He knows everything. He is there everywhere, He will protect you. Even death has to bow down to Him. So don't be afraid of anything. Walk on this path. Let's get out of this foreign land. Let's go back to the source. Take to this path fearlessly. That is what Swami Vivekananda sings in this first meeting. And as the legend goes, when the singing was over, Sri Ramakrishna suddenly grasped Narendra's hand and took him to the porch. And the master, with streaming tears streaming down his cheeks, the master said, "You have come so late, you have come so late. How unkind of you. You kept me waiting for so long. I've been waiting, waiting, waiting. My ears almost had teared listening to this talk of worldly people. How much I have been yearning to unburden my mind to one who will understand me, and you have come." And Ramakrishna takes Vivekananda to his room, and he himself personally feeds him with sweets with his own hands. And he tells, "You will come again, isn't it? You will come to Dakshineshwar, isn't it?" And that is when Swami Vivekananda asks Ramakrishna, "Sir, have you seen God?" And without even batting his eyelid, Ramakrishna says, "Yes, I have seen God. I see him as I see you here. Actually, more clearly, I see God than I can see you." And he said, "Yes, he can be seen. One can talk to him. But the thing is, who cares for God? Who cares for God? People shed torrents of tears for their wives, for their children, for their wealth, for their family, for their property. But who really weeps for God? Who really cries for the vision of God? If one really cries sincerely for God, one can surely see him." This message of Ramakrishna did have a deep impact on Narendra, because the first time he had met with someone who emphatically said, "Yes, I have seen God, and it is possible." Just like Ramakrishna's journey from affection moved to bhakti, devotion, and then it became jnana, where he was seeing only God everywhere, jnana and vairagya. When Vivekananda came in contact with Ramakrishna, his journey started. His journey started of anurakti, bhakti, jnana. And how that happened, we will spend a little more time reflecting on this journey of Swami Vivekananda in trying to understand what Bhagavan has said in the coming episode. But this is really very beautiful. If you think about it, this one line is enough for our spiritual progress. Our affection should become devotion, bhakti should become anurakti, should become bhakti, and our bhakti, once it is intense, intense anurakti will make it bhakti, intense bhakti will make it jnana, intense jnana automatically will lead us to vairagya. And after vairagya, it is just mukti, absolute freedom. So dear listeners, we'll continue this in the coming episode of Vahini Satsang. As always, join us. Please feel free to share your thoughts. You can send your responses to listener@ssmediacenter.org, or you can send to our WhatsApp number 9393-258-258. Let us together march in this journey, walk on this path of truth with joy, with love, and experience that which is far, far, far more beautiful than everything that we can experience in this world. Thank you so much, Sarah.